A lasting peace will involve two states for two peoples. Israel as a Jewish state and the homeland for the Jewish people, and the state of Palestine as the homeland for the Palestinian people. Each state enjoying self-determination, mutual recognition, and peace. So while the core issues of the conflict must be negotiated, the basis of those negotiations is clear. A viable Palestine, a secure Israel. The United States believes that negotiations should result in two states with permanent Palestinian borders with Israel, Jordan, and Egypt, and permanent Israeli borders with Palestine. We believe the borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan. Has President Obama begun siding more with Palestinians, Hamas and Fatah over Israel? Who's crazier, Republicans defending subsidies for oil companies or Democrats for opposing the offshore drilling that could knock trillions off our national debt? And will the debt ceiling increase be contingent upon spending cuts despite the left denouncing its use as leverage? We have assisting me in the opining department, old friend of the show, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. And also, you can learn more about him by going to marklevineradio.com. That's M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E radio.com. Mark, good to have you back.
Thanks, Alan. Good to be here.
Just talking with the people as well here at the State Department, as you heard, Obama recommitted the United States to support democratic movements in the Middle East, and he even mentioned that Syria's President Bashar al-Assad should stop slaughtering his own people.
Glad he said that.
Yeah, he thought to mention that. And he figured, you know, hey, either lead a political transition or get out of the way. But, you know, I mentioned this earlier as well. You got to wonder, why the hell did Secretary of State Hillary Clinton ever positively refer to Assad as a quote-unquote reformer? I'll never get that. But the part about Obama's speech causing the greatest controversy is this newly advanced position holding that the borders separating Israel and a new Palestinian state should be along the lines of the 67 border, and that the division of Jerusalem and the right of return for Palestinian refugees must also be resolved. And a lot of folks, especially Benjamin Netanyahu, the leader of Israel, is thinking this is a bit presumptuous on his part. What do you think?
I think it's a recipe for another 50 years of no solution, and I think everybody knows it. I mean, what President Obama is basically saying is that the Palestinian position, which is the Jews should not be able to pray at the Western Wall, that they can take those 4,000-year-old cemeteries in the Mount of Olives and make army latrines the way Jordan did when it conquered it, and not allow Christians to pray there either, because that, of course, was the position pre-1967, it's a non-starter.
He defended Jerusalem, the Coptic Christians in Egypt. So isn't there even a degree of unevenness about his own unevenness?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. The one good thing in this...
You see what I'm saying, right? I know he's your guy and you love the pieces, but you see what I'm saying, right?
I do. I was very disappointed with President Obama's speech. I will tell you this. He does say in the speech that negotiations have to be between Israel and the Palestinian Arabs, and that eventually they have to decide these things. And that's certainly true, but then why does he propose a solution that he knows no Israeli from the farthest left could possibly accept? No Israeli is ever going to accept that Jews are going to be denied access to the holiest place in Jerusalem, any more than the Catholics would accept denial to their holiest place in Rome or the Muslims denial to their holiest place in Mecca. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, because there seems to be missing from the equation a universality of neutral terms, guidelines, and parameters. In other words, expecting of one what you expect of the other and having the two reciprocate that same courtesy. Do I have it about right?
I think so. I'll tell you, what Barack Obama needs to understand, and I wish he'd go and visit Israel. Most presidents have visited Israel by this time in their presidency. What he needs to understand is that to the Israeli, every single time Israel has given up land, it's caused great war and great misery. People talk about land for peace, but Israel has only exchanged land for peace once, and that's the Sinai with Egypt. And frankly, even that peace may be in big trouble if we are to believe the ramblings of the new Egyptian government. Generally, particularly in the last 10 years, every time Israel has withdrawn from land, it has become a location where people can shoot rockets and missiles into all Israeli cities and terrorize all Israeli territory. If Israel would actually get peace for land, that would be a different story, but no one in Israel believes that, and frankly, I don't know any Arab that can actually legitimately promise that.
Well, Mark, you know, Hamas also is on record as saying that peace is contingent upon Israel's destruction, and as
right.
You know also, some leaders might find these terms a bit excessive, yes?
It, it's the peace of the grave. You know, if you murder every Israeli and every Jew, then Hamas will have peace. But then they're going to turn around and murder their own Arabs, because, of course, that's what they're doing when they murder Fatah activists. So, there were some good things in Obama's speech. I won't completely pan it.
And we can go over some of those other points, and I do want to do that. I've always believed that the whole is – I've always believed in the Gestalt theory. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. But this one area is such a lightning rod that many of the other things – which could be perhaps characterized in part anyway as arguably defensible or perhaps even noteworthy and positive, are naturally going to be eclipsed by this particular bombshell. Do I have it about right?
Well, it is a real change in U.S. policy.
I mean, it's sad,
too. No president has ever said that Israel can't have access to the old city of Jerusalem. I mean, that's an extreme thing. Now, he does say that they could then negotiate it on the basis of mutual swaps. But what is Israel to
But he's given away. He's giving away Israel's bargaining chips before the poker game even begins. Look,
exactly.
In order for peace to prevail, and I think you and I have talked about this a little bit as well, not only do the leaders have to want it, but so too must the people they represent. I remember
and
some
neither
months
side
ago,
wants it. To be clear, neither side wants
well, no,
it.
Well, no. There's. I got to disabuse people of that. That is a myth of equivalency argument that to which Israel should not be subjected. And I'm willing to beat up on Israel in a number of ways. You know, yes, Israel has done wrong, whether you're talking about continuing West Bank developments in disputed territories despite officially banning them, marginalizing Palestinian mineral rights and water rights, or imposing draconian checkpoints and routes of travel that periodically and unnecessarily weaken already devolved accesses to markets and commerce. That's fine. But we have to understand something. In order for peace to prevail, you got to have more than the leaders on board. You've got to have the people. And some months ago, I was talking about this earlier with Tony Blankley, the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace at the Hebrew University and the Palestinian Center for Policy and Service Survey Research in Ramallah, these guys conducted a joint poll. And the results show 78% of Israelis wanting the peace negotiations to continue, with only 30% of the Palestinians agreeing. Now, given this disparity in a joint Israeli-Palestinian poll, is there really a viable chance to ever resolve this conflict? What say you?
Well, I mean, you're right that the Israelis do want peace negotiations to continue. They want them to continue without preconditions. And the Palestinians want Israel to give up everything before they actually negotiate, which doesn't seem to be the way to negotiate. Here's the thing.
Aren't they impeding the very thing they want and then still expecting to be taken seriously? I mean, it's like you and I blindfolding a tour guide and then bitching at him for everybody getting lost.
I've never understood why the Palestinians won't take 90%. You know, when most people negotiate, they're happy to take 50%. I was a trial lawyer for a number of years. You know, and if one side says you get nothing, the other side you get 100,000, people look at it starting around 50. In the Palestinians' case, they really want more than 90%. They want nothing less than 100%, which is what happened at Camp David. If they would get in there and say, you know what, there's been a lot of conflict, we'll take 90%, there could be a solution.
Unbelievable. You know, more on this upon a return, folks. Yes, you're listening to Uncharacteristic Agreement between Mark Levine and your never-so-humble host, Alan Nathan. Stick with us, folks. Going to be right back. You are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan. Which we're trying to get to everything, but we seem to be stuck on what Obama did recently, and I guess for good reason. It's just quite the bombshell. Has President Obama begun siding more with the Palestinians, Hamas and Fatah, over Israel or not? Also, who's crazier, Republicans defending subsidies for oil companies or Democrats for opposing the offshore drilling that could knock trillions off our national debt? And will the debt ceiling increase be contingent upon spending cuts, despite the left announcing its use as leverage? Ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. And as I mentioned, we're always trying to bring to you the oasis for those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach. So I say this about Israel, and I'm going to get to our guest, Mark Levine, in just a second. As I mentioned just before the break, look, while I'm obviously on Israel's side, I do acknowledge that they've done wrong. And I mentioned, you know, the West Bank developments, despite the government officially banning them, marginalizing Palestinian mineral rights as well as water rights. You've got these draconian checkpoint routines, routes of travel periodically interrupted unnecessarily. But all that notwithstanding, the president doesn't seem to get the true disparity between these people. Okay, his insistence that Israel return to the 67 borders, give up a portion of Jerusalem, and resolve the issue of Palestinian refugees wanting to return and get their property back, despite the fact that said possessions and claims were lost as a consequence of war, seem to be devoid of having a full-bodied grasp of what is going on in the Middle East. I mean, all that Israel has done wrong notwithstanding, come on, there is still a difference between Palestinian terrorists who specifically target women and children for slaughter versus Israeli soldiers who may accidentally kill the innocent while in pursuit of those same terrorists, okay? Not seeing a difference between these groups is unambiguously bizarre. It's like saying that no moral gap exists between the motorist who deliberately mows down a pedestrian and the driver who inadvertently hits one after running a stoplight. Yes, both victims are equally dead, but no, they were not equally killed. So please, enough of telling us about this mythical equivalency between the struggle of the Palestinians and the struggle of the Israelis. In 48, they could have had their own state. They're the ones who walked away from it, and now we're all suffering the consequences of their ancient stupidity. We have a system in the opining. Old friend of the show, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. talk host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW, obviously very liberal. www.marklevineradio.com is where you can learn more about this good, fine fellow. Good to have you back, Guy.
Thanks, Alan. To his credit, Obama did not give a moral equivalency between terrorists who intentionally target civilians and accidental killing, which not only Israel does, but we do, when we've taken out a terrorist and they happen to have a civilian next door that we accidentally kill. He did not do that moral equivalency. Obama didn't do that. I want to be clear about that. I'd like to just real quickly, though, Alan, give you my solution that I've had for some time now that no one has picked up on. But if Netanyahu or Obama or anyone's listening to me, I'd love for other people to get it across. Here's my solution. You take what is pretty much undisputed. Right? No one disputes that Israel has the right to the territory it had in 1967.
Except for the people with whom they have to broker a peace.
Well, Hamas disputes it, but, Hamas wants all Israel and all Jews dead.
Yeah, but they're together now. Fatah and Hamas have kissed and made up.
Well, that's true.
I mean,
that's true. But here's my solution.
But also, I think Obama did, at least indirectly, bring about a moral equivalency between the two by presenting their concerns as if they have parity. He did it through omission, if you will, by not pointing. What did he say? He said that it's unfortunate that Israel continues with its West Bank settlements and that the Palestinians continue walking away from the bargaining table. To me, that was the mythical equivalency moment. And he said it. Check out the transcript. That's what he said. He said, it's unfortunate how Israel continues developing settlements in the West Bank and how Palestinians keep walking away from the negotiation table. A better counterweight reference would have been, oh, maybe they should stop launching Qassam rockets from Gaza into Israeli towns like Sderot and elsewhere.
Yeah, though he did mention that. He did mention that at the outset of his speech. But let me just quickly give you my solution, because I think it's a good one. It's one that no one's put forward.
Sure.
Pretty much no reasonable Palestinian disagrees, no reasonable Arab disagrees that Israel has the pre-1967 lines. And the vast majority of Israelis, I would argue more than two-thirds, recognize that the areas in the West Bank that are Arab areas should be part of a Palestinian state and all the lands that would make them contiguous. Now, that is 90% of the West Bank. It's 100% of Israel. What I think they should do is go ahead and declare that Palestinian state on that 90% of territory. In return, the Palestinians recognize Israel as a Jewish state that has existed since 1948 and leave the other 10% disputed. And my model for this is India and Pakistan. India agrees Pakistan exists. Pakistan agrees India exists. And they still fight a lot over Kashmir. And they have this line of control that is basically where the lines draw. But what I would do is, since of the entire territory, 90-plus percent of it is agreed, agree on what's agreed. Declare that Palestinian state, and then as time goes on, negotiate over the rest. Then you can say, all right, the Israeli settlements come here. Maybe there's an Arab town in Israel that wants to go over the Palestinians, though in my experience, most of them don't want to do that.
How do you see that as any more appealing than what they were offered in the 90s during the Clinton administration when Clinton brought it to its closest point possible? I mean, he was offered, Arafat was offered 90% of all the land he wanted.
95%, actually.
95, thank you. 50% of Jerusalem, and also an agreement to consider, with some gradation, a right to return for some of the Palestinian refugees. By the way, I think that's kind of nuts, don't you? What is it with the right of return? What's next? British families now having the right to take back portions of New York City's West Side because, but for the revolution, original ancestral homes would still be their residence? Where the hell is the cutoff line?
It would require all of us who are not descendants of Native Americans, which is 99% of the United States, to pack up and leave to the place of our ancestors' birth.
But we're expecting Israel to do that, which we would never expect any other country, including our own, to do. It's bizarre. We're expecting them to acquiesce to that, which we would never.
People also forget there were 800,000 Jewish refugees from Arab countries that formed, they're living in the land of Israel because they were kicked out of Egypt and Syria and Iraq and Tunisia and Morocco and so forth. Now, no one is suggesting that they have a right of return. It seems to me that this answer to the Jewish refugees and the Arab refugees is the same answer to the Indian refugees and the Pakistani refugees. Both of them transfer to the countries where they have their own peoples. And listen, no refugee, any refugee that came from 1948 would have to be 70 years old or so now. It's not like there are that many that leave. It's a question whether children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, should go back to homes.
And that's what they want. Oh, they've covered that. That's exactly what they think. But let's face it, we're talking about a culture of people that are completely disconnected from what functioning democracy is really all about. Raw democracy is mobocracy. It's like one vote, one man, one vote, one time. You can't do that. Functioning democracy says majority rules up to the point where individual minority rights are still protected. And you also ensure that individual and minority rights are not used as a justification for, if you will, being tyrannical with the majority, as can sometimes happen with the certain weights and measures that you have in a democracy. But other than that, we know that functioning democracy is essentially majority rules, but only up to the point where individual minority rights are not violated. The Middle East.
And Jews have no minority rights in Arab lands, whereas, of course, Arab citizens of Israel have full rights.
This is the paradox that most people are not aware of. This is the very paradox of which most people are not aware. I gave a speech at Harvard, Kennedy School of Government. No, the one I'm referring to now was done at George Mason University. I apologize. But I was addressing a bunch of kids, and they were asking me my opinion as to how this would come around, and maybe wouldn't the world be a better place if we just got rid of Israel? That's what some of the students brought up, some of the Muslim ones. Wouldn't we all have more peace?
Israel would probably be a better place if we just got rid of the Jews, so it's not that different.
Yeah, if we just got rid of it. Just got rid of it. And I responded to them by saying, wait a minute, why would you want to get rid of the only place where Muslims can practice their religion as they wish and participate in a political process that's part and parcel of a representative government wherein you have leaders who rule by the consent of the governed? Because you will find that if you want to locate those Muslims with the most amount of rights, the right to pursue individual prosperity, individual liberty, autonomy, and private living and thinking, if you really want to find out where in the Middle East most Muslims get to enjoy those kinds of privileges, you've got to go to Israel, right?
Right. There's not a single Arab country on earth that has the freedoms for Arab citizens that Israel provides its Arab citizens. Unfortunately,
Particularly
women.
No, precisely. But anytime you want to be aggressive with the Muslim community's more fanatical fringe or the jihadists, you're immediately tagged as racist or bigoted. And, you know, I got to tell you, if all the Muslim leaders around the world are correct when telling us that we should not think of the Osama bin Ladens of the world or the Hassan Nasrallahs of the world or the Ayman al-Zawahiris of the world as equal to Islam, then doesn't it naturally follow that when we return fire against them, it's only against them and their supporters, not all of Islam? Once separated, always separated. Isn't that fair?
It is, and I think we should never distinguish and claim that they're all Islam, because a lot of peaceful Muslims, particularly in areas outside the Middle East.
I know, but if we're already talking about only returning fire to those who fired upon us, we shouldn't have to become rhetorical contortionists and always have to parenthetically say, not all Muslims are doing this. That should be self-evident out of the gate.
It doesn't hurt to say it, Alan.
It does if they're using it as a device to clamp down the rationale to which they otherwise would not have a productive response. Never enough time. Mark Levine, thanks again. You're with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan.